Welcome to the Compliance Time, AML and Financial Crime Podcast. Here, you can learn from compliance experts, enthusiasts and creators who are contributing to the fast-moving and dynamic field of financial compliance.
Hello everyone and welcome to Compliance Time. In this episode, our guest is Erica Stanford, a serial entrepreneur in the cryptocurrency space. She launched Cryptocurrency Simplified in 2017, a leading educational platform that provides information on cryptocurrency, blockchain, tokenization, and future tech in easy-to-understand language. Following that, she also launched and now runs the UK's biggest and most recommended crypto networking and events organization, Cryptocurry Club. She's also the author of a book called Crypto Wars, Fake Debts, Missing Billions, and Industry Disruption. This book shows how market-wide manipulation schemes, unregulated processes, and a new collection of technologies that are often misunderstood have been exploited to create the Wild West of crypto run by some less than reputable characters. From OneCoin to Ponzi coin to Trump coin and everything in between, Crypto Wars uncovers the scandals, unpicks the system behind them, and allows you to better understand the new technology that has the potential to revolutionize banking and our world for the better. Now you can get 20% off from the book if you order from Kogan page, that's KOGANPAGE.com, using code CryptoWars20. And now let's hear from Erica. Hello, Erica, and welcome to Compliance Time. I'm very excited to host our conversation today and discuss about interesting books and ideas that you have.
Yeah, hi, Denise. Thank you for having me on. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. So let's start by telling us about yourself and your experience with compliance and crypto.
So, I mean, I've never worked in the compliance space. My only real experience of compliance, I must say, is because we get to know lots of crypto companies, lots of different startups, lots of various different companies in crypto and blockchain and fintech. And most of the struggles they have is sort of trying to work out how to be compliant, I think, because it's a space where you've got so much changes in regulation, and the regulation isn't really set yet and isn't really clear yet. So you've got what I see is a lot of companies sort of approaching lawyers and approaching experts and specialists and trying to understand what they have to do and how to go about it. And it's a space where you've got really evolving, the regulation isn't quite set in stone and clear yet, but where you've got all of these evolving technologies and anti-money laundering systems and custody systems and all of these different sort of evolving solutions that companies are looking at how they can employ. But the compliance seems to be a very evolving space in crypto, and the crypto space, that's one I got into a few years ago, mostly out of interest in the space. And as you know, we now run this incredible community evolving comprising most of the crypto communities, or crypto companies, fintech companies, blockchain companies, as well as everything from startups to corporates to big payment companies using the technology, to companies that are looking at how they can use crypto or blockchain, to charities, to universities, to students, to investors, and the whole ecosystem.
And that's the Cryptocurry Club, right?
Yes, correct. Yep.
So tell us a bit how it all started there.
So the Cryptocurry Club, that started towards the end of 2018. I'd been sort of looking at the crypto space for a while and wanted to understand more and wanted to meet more people. And this was at the time when it was still relatively earlier on in the space. There were some events and some really good events, but they were quite sort of dry and, well, not dry, but focused on the tech, and at least I'm not a really techie person, so I found it, harder to understand necessarily some of the content of those. But they were really focused and aimed at developers and coders and so forth. And then you had other events, but it was really hard to meet people in the space and to find out what really was happening. And this was at a time when you had the ICO era, when that there were still a number of scams and so forth happening. So you really had to be very careful in the space. So I just wanted to meet other people in the space, find out what else was happening. And so the Crypto Curry Club started. I wanted to meet other people in One Good Space. I'd been previously to a different networking event that had taken place over food. Curry specifically, it was a Christmas curry for a different industry, but it was just a group of people sat around sharing food together and you know, talking and laughing and sharing stories and sharing some food and drinks. But the minute you're sat down at a table or round a table sharing food, it just makes it so much easier to meet people and to get to know people and to sort of break down a few barriers and to break the ice effectively. So I wanted that for the crypto space. And for the blockchain space. And I just thought it would be much easier to really get to know people if we did that, sort of got a group of people together on an invite-only basis so that everybody is you know, relevant and so forth. And you know, worked in the same industry and would be, you know, good for everybody to get to know. But it's just so much easier when you're sat around sharing food and drinks together. So we started the Crypto Curry Club. Everyone always asks why curry, partly because it's the main food in the UK. It's considered to be the national, the most eaten food in the UK. We've got a lot of very good curry houses, and partly because of the name Crypto Curry. It's a play on the cryptocurrency name, so it was just a bit of fun. So the Crypto Curry Club was started, and you know, I think at first we just thought it was going to be, you know, the odd get together where everybody gets to. Everybody gets to come and, you know, once a month or so forth, maybe have some food together. But I think demand was so great to meet other people in the space and to find out what else was happening and to get all the companies together. And, you know, it was really exciting in those early days. You had, for probably the first time, just roomfuls of people that were all just working in the same space and all had the same interests and aims, getting together with food and drinks. So it grew really quickly. So now we've got the main crypto community in the UK. We've got thousands of members, people all you know, getting together. It used to be getting together in person to share food and drink, and we had different sort of themed events with speakers talking about different niche subjects and networking events where everybody would get together and learn from each other and form relationships and, you know, friendships in many cases and business partnerships just by virtue of sharing food with people that are in relevant companies and niches within the industry.
And you proceeded the work during the pandemic, right? Because although it made it difficult to meet, I suppose there were some kind of virtual presence of the club members.
Yeah, I mean, and the pandemic was, you know, an interesting one in sort of every way. I think at first, initially, I didn't expect it to last very long. So at first we sort of refunded the money for the upcoming events and sort of thought that real life events would come back quite soon. So we just focused on sort of building the brand and we started doing digital events and started hosting webinars. So, and then of course the pandemic and lockdown has lasted so much longer than anyone ever expected. And, you know, in effect, we're still in a form of lockdown. We still can't get groups of more than six people together inside. And, you know, this is almost a year and a half on now. So yeah. We expanded digitally. We started running webinars and online events, which really grew our audience. We continued to do, we had an industry newsletter, so that continues. And we've now got over 4,000 weekly subscribers for that, the Crypto Courier. We launched a monthly publication, Blockchain Industry Review, which is a sort of a magazine, both online and physical for the industry, including sort of deep dive features and interviews for the industry. So that's been going really well and growing. And yes, we're now sort of hosting some sort of panels and online events and now starting to slowly look at what might be possible to go back in terms of in-person events. But yeah, the community has grown a lot by being digital and a lot more internationally. Of course, it will be really good to go back to being able to see people in person. But of course, things have changed, and I think it's key to recognize that you don't necessarily need to be in the same sort of physical location anymore.
Right, to connect successfully and to network nowadays. But still, it's different, as you were explaining before, when people share food and drinks and they just are on the same table and then a conversation starts. It's different than the webinars, most certainly. And in the meantime, you also worked on your new book, Crypto Wars: Fake Debts, Missing Billions, and Industry Disruption, and it's about to be released very, very soon. Can you tell us what was the inspiration for creating the new book?
Yeah, well, so that took a massive lockdown, actually. The inspiration wasn't my own. The inspiration, I have to give all credit to the publisher. They had an idea of doing a book about the biggest sort of hacks and scams and the name Crypto Wars, and approached me with the idea if I'd be interested to do the book. And so the inspiration, I have to give 100% credit to the publisher for having the idea, and grateful to them for approaching me. And I think what was interesting about the subject before lockdown, a few months before lockdown, so just right at the end of 2019, we'd hosted Jamie Bartlett, who had been he works at the BBC and had been the one who did the Missing Crypto Queen podcast series. And that, if anybody doesn't know it, it's a phenomenally good podcast series where they do a sort of a full scale investigation into the OneCoin scam, which is now thought to be the biggest Ponzi scheme in crypto. That it's a scam that took about an estimated roughly $25 billion of people's money. So a really, really big scam. And the founder has been missing since 2017 and sort of been hunted by the FBI ever since then. And they started arresting some of the founders, but it's still sort of ongoing somehow. And it was this incredible podcast series. So we'd been lucky to host Jamie to speak at one of our events. And he did us this sort of deep dive talk about the scam and how it got so big, and about the rise of multi-level marketing and scams, and some of the real sort of stories behind the OneCoin Ponzi scheme. And from that, some other people who'd been in the crypto space since sort of really the early times, who'd been exposed to some of the biggest scams and so forth, approached me and started sharing their stories of scams that they'd seen in the early days. And even people who'd been trying to expose scams and warn people about them and prevent other people from falling for them. And some people had literally had death threats for trying to expose some of the earlier scams, and told me some really personal stories that they didn't necessarily want to share too publicly in some cases, because they'd really had these death threats from some of the people and sort of gangs behind some of the scams. So that was really interesting, and they started inviting me to some of the sort of Facebook groups and social media sort of groups and so forth that are run either by the scams or by people supporting them. So I'd sort of been given this real interesting exposure to sort of the world of some of these scams and how they work. And I could see how, persuasive some of the scams were, and how good their marketing was, and how many people were still really wanting to be a part of them and were really falling victim to them. So when the publisher approached me, I thought it was a really interesting subject. And then, just started researching a lot and started speaking to a lot of people who'd been involved in terms of not involved in the scams, but involved in sort of trying to investigate them, or trying to find out what really happened, or who had witnessed them sort of happening as they were happening.
That's amazing. And what was the most fascinating, let's say, and shocking scam that you came across? Like, what was really something that, if you had seen, say, it would be like, I would probably fallen for that.
I think I don't know if it's one particular scam that I found the most shocking. I think what to me has been to use your words, the most shocking has been how big that the scams get, and what there's one key trend that has been used across many of the biggest scams, and these are scams that have, you know, brought in tens of billions of dollars now. It's the inclusion of this sort of marketing tactic called multi-level marketing. Now, multi-level marketing is a way of selling products, and it's in a sort of pyramid structure whereby people get paid incentives and paid commissions for every person that they sell something to, but in a sort of a downline basis. So if I sell something to you, I get a commission, but then if you buy in and you sell the product to somebody else, I also get a percentage of that commission and so forth, often down many levels. So multi-level marketing, it's a way of selling things that comes with a real sort of inbuilt incentive system for those who do the sales. And how it works, because it's sort of built in a pyramid structure, that you get a percentage of what other people sell if you get in earliest. So this multi-level marketing structure is legal in some countries, and if you're selling, you know, it's used quite prevalently in things like selling certain vitamins or beauty products or other things whereby you're actually selling a product, and then it's legal. But the sales structure is a really, you know, I'm going to use a way, well, maybe not good, but effective way of getting lots of people to promote a product, because everybody gets a commission and everybody gets a share of it, and it's really high incentive structures. So when you're bringing multi-level marketing, which has this really sort of rewarding incentive structure to people who promote products, then you've got a real, it's really effective at spreading the scams. And what was, I think, key in the crypto scams is you've got this multi-level marketing structure meets crypto. And of course, crypto can be, you know, highly risky, is highly volatile, and so forth. But early people had made money in it, and people saw that and wanted to do well equally. And then these multi-level marketing schemes promised that anyone that invested in them would get the same returns. And they made all of these claims. So they would say, well, if you just give us your money, we'll invest it in mining equipment, which is the equipment used to sort of create new cryptocurrencies, and we'll mine new Bitcoin for you, or we'll mine new crypto for you, so you'll get this guaranteed reward. Or if you send us your money, we've got this trading algorithm which will trade crypto for you, and you'll get really high returns. Or, you know, we'll give you these crypto coins and they'll double in value, or they'll double in quantity, and then you'll have lots more money. So they made all of these promises, but because they weren't actually selling anything, they were just selling these sort of promises around crypto. So what you had is lots of people buying into the scams because they, you know, they saw the potential, and they saw the promise, and they saw the promise numbers. And in actual fact, because there was nothing behind the scams, they were just Ponzi schemes. That they never had the mining equipment, they never had the algorithms, they never had the sort of the cryptocurrency. Even in one case, it was just these sort of claims made that people bought into. But the problem was with multi-level marketing, because it's not just the scam itself promoting it itself, but people fall victim, and as happens often with Ponzi schemes, it's the first people who buy in, they get their money back, and they do quite well out of it. So they think it's real and they think it's legitimate. Mm. And then they go to their friends and their families and say, look, I found this project, and you know, if you invest, it will pay you back and you'll do well. And I think where the multi-level marketing scams get so bad is, yes, some of the people promoting them often know it's a scam or know it's too good to be true, but, you know, just want the commissions. But often it's sort of people who've been innocently dragged in and don't know that it's a scam, and you know, really think it's good. And, you know, because they've invested early, so they've done well, so they've got their money back, so they think it's real. And they're the ones in promoting it to their friends and their families. And so it just spread so big because people were buying it from people that they trusted and believed in. And often it was these people that didn't really know it was a scam that were promoting it, and you know, sometimes promoting it with good intentions, just as a way for their family to make more money. And then you had religious leaders and community leaders and so forth promoting them, and you know, with mixed intentions. Sometimes the intention was good; they really believed it and thought their communities would do well. Other times they were just more incentivized by the paychecks. But I think how some of these scams got so big is just because you've got so many people saw it and were promised these really high commissions for everybody that they brought in. So they just grew so big. They just grew really, really, really big. And I think what was particularly shocking for me to hear is, you know, you had people going all around the world in developing countries, and you know, often people who really couldn't afford to lose money, and going around the villages and going around communities and persuading their friends and families to sell everything they had. You know, some people sold their houses or sold their livestock or everything to invest in what turned out to be a scam. So it's not one particular scam that they used. That there's a scam called OneCoin, which was, you know, arguably the biggest scam that sort of created the blend of multi-level marketing meets crypto in a sort of Ponzi scheme. But many of us have since copied that, and that's where you get, I think, the most people affected and the most people losing their money.
And in the book, you interview also people who were investigating similar scams, or there are also accounts of victims of such scams. What was the research that you performed while writing?
How I researched the scams and how they operated? Oh gosh, a total blend. And you know, I mean, this was new for me because I'd never, you know, really written anything. I mean, certainly not since university. So you know, the research was new to me. But I think there was some really good investigative pieces of journalism or investigations on the internet. There were some details of court cases in some cases where you could see sort of the findings of what had really happened. And in other cases, where I've been lucky is because with the Crypto Curry Club, we've got this really big and amazing community of people working in crypto. And, you know, for some of the scams, there had been people within the Crypto Curry Club who had been, you know, exposed to the scams from the early stages, and people who'd been watching some of them from the early stages and trying to warn other people about them and so forth. So some of it was from research, from investigations, from the court documents, from Google, from other people's finding. And some of it I was really lucky to be able to just speak to some of the people who'd been sort of watching alongside and who knew, you know, from a personal level what had been really going on.
That's great. I also think this is a great way to approach a subject, to speak with someone and get their experience on something that they were researching, they were working on, or, you know, court documents and things like that. So I am sure that there will be a lot of value that will be within the book, which the reader would find interesting as a compilation, you know, of all of these research. I mean, I use the word research for the lack of better word coming to my mind today, but you know, I think that from what I have seen from the book, it looks amazing. And what the industry disruption part stands for within the title?
So that what that's referring to is two things partly. With cryptocurrency, you've got so many new ideas, so much innovation happening in terms of how, you know, how fintech works, how technology works, how money can be raised, how money can work in payments, how you can, for example, have the proof of transactions on blockchains, so you can send money more cheaply, so you can have micropayments, you can, you know, almost bypass the remittance industry because you can just send money cheaper and more efficiently with crypto than you would if you had to pay a remittance company. So there's with crypto, I mean, I think a lot of people get caught on the fact that it's these volatile currencies and you can trade them or on the scams. But actually, if you look at crypto, there's so much potential there. There's so many much exciting things happening. There's so much innovation going on. And, you know, in some cases, you've got these really new exciting technologies and concepts and processes that are happening that are really changing how, you know, how banks and how finance and how industries look at the world and are really questioning what they can do regarding sending money, regarding micropayments, regarding transactions, regarding loyalty payments and so forth. So there's so much potential and so much good with crypto. So what the industry disruption is really focused on is not the scams, but actually, you know, crypto does a lot of good. And so it refers to two things. Partly it refers to the many good potentials that the technology behind crypto offers. So it's partly to do with the real disruption that industry is looking at and how industry might change and evolve as a result of these new technologies. And partly it's also a bit of a play on you had with crypto, for example, in the particularly in the ICO era, you had all of these startups and companies and projects promising to change the world, and, you know, just promising that if they used blockchain or if they had their own cryptocurrency, that they would change the world. And, you know, 98% of those have now crashed or failed or were scams. But, you know, some of them really have. And some of them really have brought about these game-changing new technologies. So it's really looking at how much change the evolution of crypto is bringing about and how much disruption it potentially can cause, and not necessarily disruption in a bad way. In many cases, it's making things work more transparently, more efficiently, more affordably. So there's so much good that can come with crypto as well. And, you know, many of these crypto startups, yes, many of them have been scams, and many have brought tremendous innovation to the space. So it's really looking at some of the innovation that's happening.
Yeah, that's true. There is so much potential within the blockchain and the crypto space that can really change many industries, not only finance, as you mentioned, because they make things much more transparent and easy to follow and really open source for everyone to verify. And from your experience with the Crypto Club and writing the book, do you have any recommendations for people who want to genuinely invest and profit from crypto space, and how they can identify and not the victims of scams? Anything that stands out that you could say to people how to be more critical approaching this subject?
I mean, I wouldn't want to get into sort of pretending to know enough about the investment space on that side, but how to look for scams. The problem is, it's really hard because scams now are getting so clever and so sophisticated that, you know, they have really good websites. They have really good marketing. They make these wonderful claims. And, you know, I think one of the things that scams do is, you know, in some cases they will take over, they, you know, effectively hack into other people's websites or social media and so forth. So you never know who's actually doing what. But, you know, scams will make all of these claims and sometimes make promises and guaranteed returns and so forth. So, you know, as a general rule, if something is promising a set return, be very, very cautious, because it's not really, you know, I mean, now there's some cases with DeFi where they seem to be doing it. But, you know, if something is promising guaranteed returns, be very, very careful and really look at that, because in general terms, that is impossible to do. And I think where one has to be careful is scams will make up all of these claims. They'll say they've got these partnerships with governments in some cases, with regulators, with companies. So they'll say that they've got certain companies as customers. They'll make up all of these claims and say, well, they've got this, you know, that they've got Visa cards or MasterCards, or that they're going to be listed in whatever stock exchange. And the thing is, with the scams, there's nothing stopping them from saying that. So people fall for them really easily because they see, well, they've got so-and-so as a customer or so-and-so as a partner, or, you know, they're issuing cards by so-and-so, so therefore it must be real. So I think the single main thing I would say is, you know, if anything looks too good to be true, be very, very careful, and, you know, usually it is. But also, if a project is claiming any of these things, just because it's said on a website or just because it's on social media doesn't mean it's true. You know, there's so many cases where scams are making these claims publicly, but they never have those partnerships. So I would just say, be very, very careful. Do an enormous amount of research. And in my experience, if there's anything that is based on a multi-level marketing or reward structure, for example, if anybody's getting high kickbacks or high commissions from your investing and so forth, and if it's sort of in a pyramid style structure, when that relates to crypto, I've never seen an example where it isn't a scam. So
yeah,
be careful of any claims made. Just do an awful lot of research. If anything that's too good to be true, it usually is. And just be very, very careful when there's commissions involved for getting people to invest.
Yeah, even recently, I think I saw some reputable sources. I don't remember on the internet. It was like Times or Business Insider, I'm not sure, that they published some what turned out to be fake news later on that day, that the UAE is creating its own coin, crypto coin there. And, you know, to me, it sounded like the real thing until I later on was reading some more, and it turned out that that was not the case. So it's so hard nowadays with the fake news and identifying what's really going on and what's not true. So yeah, we need to be really, really critical when reviewing anything that we can find on the internet or anyone saying these days.
I mean, that's it. And because there's no, you know, because the scams, they're not worried about regulators and so forth. They're willing to make any claims that they want. And some of the scams, they sort of promise these, you know, guaranteed returns. They say if you invest, you'll get 1% back every day, or you'll get X percent a month. And, you know, I think one has to then look at these claims and think, well, if they can really make, you know, guaranteed 1% every day, or, you know, 500% returns a year, whatever it is, if they can really make those returns for themselves, why are they making that public? Why are they sharing that opportunity? If they've really got this incredible trading algorithm or whatever it is, and they can make all the money they could ever want just for themselves. So, you know, and it's not possible for banks or funds or whatever who have access to the best trading software and trade and so forth that money can buy. So I think one has to look at some of the claims made, and if they're really promising, or, you know, or guaranteeing such high potential returns, A, it's not really possible, B, it's you know, mostly illegal, and C, one has to question that. So I think if there are any that are really claiming that, you know, if you invest, you'll get really, really high returns back, you know, it's 99.9% likelihood that it's a scam.
That's true. Yeah, nobody can guarantee anything with regards to investments and things like that. So this is for sure something that people should have. It is a very big red flag when dealing with something guaranteed as returns or investment or anything like that. And because we are approaching the end of compliance time, we usually ask our guests at the end to take out the crystal ball and try to make a prediction for the future. So if you try to predict what would happen, how do you think the crypto wars will evolve going forward?
How crypto will evolve? I mean, the scams are still ongoing, unfortunately, and regulation is happening slowly, and regulation is happening more slowly than sort of the innovation in crypto. But I think what we are seeing in crypto, there's many incredible new companies offering really sort of institutional level of custody and of, you know, ensuring the safety of crypto, and there's insurance companies and so forth stepping in. So in terms of the actual crypto space, the technology is evolving really fast, which will make it much safer and much more usable by corporates, by institutions, and so forth. So I do think we'll see more crypto used by the mainstream, and you know, within the next few years, because the infrastructure around it is getting much, much safer and much better. So there's so many more companies are looking at using crypto in terms of maybe for incentive payments or for, you know, loyalty rewards or for saying microtransactions or paying for content and so forth. So there's so many potential use cases that are now being explored and implemented. So I think we'll see much more mainstream use of crypto, you know, and I think the user experience of crypto, which traditionally has been quite difficult and quite hard to use, is now getting much easier to use. The user experience is getting better, the infrastructure is getting better, and there's now systems being set up where you don't even need a sort of a long, you know, complicated crypto or Bitcoin or whatever address to send money to. You can just get somebody's name and check that and send it to that instead, much like you'd send a photo over WhatsApp. So the user experience is getting much better, and if you look at charts of people traditionally using crypto, it is much the sort of the younger, you know, the younger generations and millennials and so forth, who are just much, much more tech savvy, using social media much more. So I think we'll see much more crypto being used by sort of corporates in terms of loyalty payments and micropayments and rewards payments, B, in terms of institutional investment, but also in terms of just the younger generations just sending crypto to each other by message and to just, you know, pay for little things. And I think what we'll see, I mean, you've got the cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin and so forth, you know, which I think will continue. But then you've also got the growth of the stable coins and currencies where, you know, that they don't have the volatility. They might be asset backed, but because they're digital, because they're on blockchain, that it's much easier and cheaper to send, you know, micro quantities, which isn't really possible with fiat currency. So I think, you know, the space is evolving very, very fast, and there's a real brain drain of many of the smartest and most motivated people moving from corporates into crypto startups and so forth. So I think that we'll see that continuing. And then the scams, sadly, they're still happening. You still hear about big ones starting now and big ones happening and continuing now. And I think that's a hard question, because it's not so much a crypto thing, and often they're not really about crypto at all. They're taking advantage of the fact that it's a new exciting technology that lots of people want to be involved in. But we're also at a time, and you know, particularly which has been grown because of lockdown and because of the pandemic and all of that, and because of the rise of ransomware and sort of the technology in terms of hacking and in terms of scamming. So we're seeing a rise of scams in general, which isn't really related to crypto. It's just a rise of cybercrime, a rise of hacks, a rise of ransomware, a rise of all of these different tricks trying to separate people from their money, which happens over phone calls, that happens over text messages, over social media, over the internet, through letters and so forth. So, you know, I think regarding the crypto scams, I think unfortunately, whilst crime in general is getting so much worse at the moment, you know, I don't see that will sort of go away as quickly as we'd like, especially whilst sort of regulators and law enforcement seem to be, you know, under pressure with so many other factors.
That's true. And before we go off, you mentioned that there is a certain discount for the book for the people that are interested with your publisher. Can you please just mention that? I will include all the information within the notes of the show, but if you can just mention about it too.
Yeah, so the book is available internationally now, so anyone can get it through the publisher Kogan Page. So that's Kogan Page, KOGANPAGE.com. They've got a discount code for 20% off. It's Crypto Wars 20. So anybody can get a 20% off discount off through them. And also, it's available through Amazon, through all sort of major booksellers and so forth, depending on what country you're in.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. We are looking forward for the release of the book, and I will include all the links so people can find it easily as well if they couldn't catch the side from our discussion, but thank you so much again for being with us and for sharing all the interesting findings you've got, and looking forward to connect soon.
No, thank you so much, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you for listening to Compliance Time. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to leave us a review, which will help others to find the podcast. Also, you can subscribe for email updates on our website, cmpltime.com. And don't forget, check out our new blog. Thank you. Till next week.